The cruelest month.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Glad you can join me as Marketplace covers the fallout from the financial crisis. What is it with October and the stock markets? 1929, 1987, and now this October. Unless there's a huge rally today, this will be Wall Street's worst month since the 87 crash. The Dow is down 15%, the S&P and NASDAQ 18%. In Asia and Europe, it's been the worst month in history. And the news this morning isn't helping. Consumer spending dropped in September by the largest amount in 4 years, and it looks like the GM-Chrysler merger is on hold because President Bush has nixed government funding for it. So, without further ado, the Halloween numbers. So far, the Dow is down about 0.5%, 44 points to 91.36. The NASDAQ and S&P 500 are down another percentage. The Nikkei closed 5% lower today, even though Japan cut interest rates for the first time in 7 years. European shares are down 1% so far. I imagine it's scary if you owe more on your home than your house is worth. It's called being upside down on your mortgage. A study out today says more than 7 million properties are in that situation. Nancy Marshall-Genzer has more.
The study was conducted in the third quarter of this year by First American CoreLogic. The study says almost 20% of mortgage borrowers have negative equity, but it's not clear that all of those mortgage holders will go into foreclosure. Guy Sakala is the publisher of Inside Mortgage Finance.
But not all of that 20% or one out of every five borrowers is in financial problem. So the other question you have is, to what extent will people who figure out they owe more than their house is worth and really won't be making anything other than what amounts to a rental payment are going to start walking away from their homes?
Sakala says that's not clear because we don't have enough experience with mounting foreclosures to know what people will do. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
The Wall Street Journal has a story today looking at how much the big banks owe their executives. The banks getting money from the rescue package owe a total of $40 billion. That's for past year's pay and pensions as of the end of 2007. In some cases, the debt to executives exceeds what the banks owe in pensions to their entire workforce. If you are a bank and you don't want to take money from your own government, how about getting it from someone else's? That's what Barclays, the British bank, is doing. Barclays said today it's raising $12 billion from the Middle East. Our man in London, Stephen Beard, has more on that.
Barclays is planning to raise the money mainly from sovereign wealth funds in Qatar and Abu Dhabi. The bank had earlier talked about deals with Russian and even Libyan investors. Anyone, it seems, rather than the British government. Barclays rebuffed the offer of British taxpayers' cash because that would involve the government taking a stake in the bank. And that, says Andrew Hilton of the CSFI think tank, would have strings attached.
In particular, limitations on dividends, certainly having somebody looking over your shoulder when it comes to executive remuneration. And on both of those counts, I think the people who run Barclays would rather go to the private markets than have the government's discipline imposed upon them.
He says that banks both in Britain and the US feel that seeking help from their own governments is a desperate last resort. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
This is the Morning Report for Friday, October 31st on Marketplace.org. I bet a lot of people on Wall Street are anxious to see this. Warren Buffett's company releases its latest profit numbers today. Marketplace's Janet Babin reports from North Carolina Public Radio.
Berkshire Hathaway has consistently rewarded investors with excellent returns, but some years will always be better than others. The company's net earnings in the second quarter dropped more than 7%, mainly because of weak insurance profits. Third quarter results could follow that trend. Charles Elson at the University of Delaware says weak results at Berkshire Hathaway might please Joe the investor. Hey, if even Warren Buffett can't turn a profit, then...
I think the rest of us shouldn't feel so bad. And if he's not doing well, it means that the economy is really in tough shape. If someone who is that savvy is having a tough time making a lot of money.
Buffett has said unemployment will rise and business will falter, but he's also said he'll continue to buy stocks and urged others to do the same. He probably wasn't talking about Berkshire Hathaway. Most Americans could barely afford one share. I'm Janet Babin for Marketplace.
One share of Berkshire A sells for about $111,000 at the moment. Now for some stocks most people can't afford, the S&P 500 companies. Research by Thomson Reuters predicts profits of S&P companies will grow by more than 30% in the fourth quarter. Say what? We had to check that out. Here's Ashley Milne-Tite.
Analysts have a reputation for wearing rose-colored glasses. They're much more likely to rate a stock a buy than a sell, even in bad times. John Butters of Thomson Reuters says there's a good reason why these fourth quarter estimates seem so strangely positive.
If you look at the fourth quarter of 2007, particularly in the financial sector, we really started to see the earnings weakness due to write-downs for the credit problems.
The bank's problems dragged down average earnings in the S&P 500 last year. This year, with those write-downs out of the way, analysts expect the banks to grow quickly. And once again, Butters says that's skewing the average.
If you remove the financial sector from the index, that 31.7% growth rate drops down to 1.2%.
Don't bank on that 1.2%, though, he says. Analysts revise their expectations all the time, and recently they've been cutting estimates across a whole range of sectors. In New York, I'm Ashley Milne-Tite for Marketplace.
Job fairs ought to be a hot commodity right now with the number of layoffs we're hearing about these days, but actually, not so much. Renita Jablonski explains.
Jack Cohen is CEO of JobExpo.com. It's one of the largest job fair operators in the country. This would seem to be a good time to be in his line of work, but Cohen says the company just went through its own round of layoffs.
We had the team up to about 100, 105 people, and now we're down to about 60.
Job fair producers make money mainly from selling booths and convention space to employers. Job Expo, for instance, typically charges companies about $1,400. That gets you a table, a sign with your company name, and access to all of the resumes that come in. Cohen says a fair set for next month in New York will have half the number of employers it did last year.
Companies who've signed contracts to attend the shows have even called up and asked if they could get out.
He says the last time he saw such a hiring slowdown was just after September 11th. I'm Renita Jablonski for Marketplace.
Being a musician is a job, but there are many different categories of musicians. The singer-songwriter at your local nightclub probably has a day job. And a lot of those struggling artist types are really struggling right now. Joshua McNichols reports from Seattle.
By night, Jessie Fortino performs indie music under the name Tiny Vipers. By day, she slots beans at Bimbo's Bitchin' Burritos.
I don't really think about it. I just kind of do it like a robot.
Sometimes Jessie compares herself to her more conventionally successful friends.
They have like real jobs and like are married and they're adults. And I'm just like, I work at a fast food restaurant. I'm not educated and it would be hard for me to escape this anyways. So the fact that I can do anything at all with music is a miracle. I feel super fulfilled. I dig my way.
By suburb, Dawood Rama came from a family of musicians. He shocked his parents when he said he wanted to be a dentist.
I was a rebel. I saw dentistry as a challenge. I saw science as a challenge. And coming from like an underserved background, just hearing what you can't do, and I could be fueled by that at times.
But he couldn't get music out of his head. His patients called him the singing dentist. Now he performs soul music as Wuda. He's looking for his big break so he can leave dentistry behind. Nearby, a King County Metro bus sits idling at a bus stop. Bus driver Steve Smith pulls out his spare set of drumsticks and plays a rockabilly beat right there on the steering wheel.
And then train beat.
Smith plays drums for the country western band Canute Bell and the Blue Collars. He says drummers and bus drivers both need humility, and humility is one of the main messages in country western music.
I think it's a pride of doing a simple job well.
Thank you.
I mean, it's not always about climbing the ladder and making more money or something like that. It's about being content.
These musicians have a little secret. Sometimes the key to happiness is just having a little music in your head. In Seattle, I'm Joshua McNichols for Marketplace.
Oh, me,
another that bore me away.
A lot of businesses say they're recession-proof, but there's really only one that is recession-proof for sure. That's the funeral industry. Still, there's a guy here in Southern California who's taking no chances. He started a new business turning coffins into living room furniture. Caitlin Carroll has our story.
Vidal Herrera has a dark sense of humor. He calls the location of his private autopsy business the Body Shop. And upstairs, where he and his staff work out, it's the dead-end gym. So it's not surprising that he started making couches out of coffins.
Funeral directors cannot resell used coffins to the public for burial purposes. They know I'm going to make couches, so they sell them to me under the table for cash.
Herrera buys defective caskets from distributors and funeral homes. Then he tricks them out with custom paint jobs and colorful upholstery. Think hot rod as applied to a couch. They sell for about $3,500 each. Herrera sold 17 couches since he opened his East LA business 6 months ago and has orders for more from as far away as Dubai. Wondering about the customers?
Punk rockers. I grew up around punk rock and hardcore. It's the idea, you know, that you're, you know, kind of sharing space with like a dead person.
Clothing designer Todd Waters is using couches in a fashion photo shoot.
That was interesting.
He designs for rock and death metal bands. Part of what appeals to him is the authenticity.
So I would think it has just, you know, wide range appeal. I mean, most people are going to end up in a coffin like one day, probably.
Be it kitsch or an urge to look death in the eye while you watch TV, USC marketing professor Ken Wilber says there is demand for this kind of novelty item. And for those grown-up goths or tattoo parlor owners who want to make a statement, the coffin is an untapped resource.
It's a symbol which has not yet been co-opted by any major brands or marketers. Almost every other cultural symbol we have has been used to express brand meanings.
Herrera knows he's confronting death-defying odds starting a new business in this economy. But, well, life is short.
That's it. You just try it. You go for broke.
And if it doesn't pay off, then, he says, coffin couches will be buried 6 feet under, never to be heard from again. In Los Angeles, I'm Caitlin Carroll for Marketplace.
If you're just dying to see pictures of the coffin couches, by all means, visit our website, marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for listening, and happy Halloween.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.